series. So if you've missed any, all of our talks are online, and so you can catch up on there. But we're going to continue through what we've seen already from the life of Joseph is that he is born into some real dysfunction, isn't he? If you remember that first week, just being born into dysfunction with a family of jealousy and betrayal, and his brothers, that kind of overflows, and his brothers start to seek to sell him into slavery. It's going to be one of those weeks. I can feel it already. We had balloons last week. That was the battle. This week is just going to be the joys of chaos. So let's embrace it. I'm not going to battle with it. I'm just going to let it happen. last week we saw that it ended with Joseph being sold into slavery. And he ends up in Egypt. So as he's sold into slavery, he ends up in the place, this detour actually ends up him being in a place of the nation that had influence over that area and a leadership structure in place. So God, is already beginning to do something. And we see that he ends up not as the leader of the nation, but as a slave. So it's still not going the way that Joseph has dreamed that it would, and he's a slave in Potiphar's house, but he just works faithfully there and serves. But then, as we saw last week, that he's falsely accused of being inappropriate with Potiphar's wife, and he's thrown into prison. And Joseph found actually that faithfulness doesn't always feel fair, and that as he serves faithfully, he ends up in a place that he really doesn't want to be in. He did the right thing, but ends up in the wrong place. And today we're going to see that he spends a significant amount of time in that place of prison. But in that place, God is still working. So if you've got a Bible, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 40. So if you want to find that, we've got some Bibles at the back. I think if you haven't got a Bible and you'd like one, then have that. We're also going to get it up on the screen. While you're maybe finding that or just getting settled in, let me ask you a question. I want to just a show of hands this morning to see who enjoys waiting. Any people that enjoy waiting? Any fans? Very British to enjoy. I like a queue. I just want to stand in a queue. Any like one person that's a bit if. I kind of expected that. I kind of expected that actually as human beings, we're not massive fans of waiting. It's not something that we enjoy doing. You see, we live in a world that is fast-paced. We live in a world that is constantly on the go. We live in a world that has fast internet, same-day delivery. I can get frustrated when a website takes like longer than 3 seconds to load. And I'm starting to get a little bit impatient and it's starting to wind me up a little bit. I got frustrated this week. A little bit of public confession. I got quite frustrated this week. I went to the supermarket to buy some soup because my life is rock and roll. Normally I try and make soup, but I'd left it too late and so I was going to buy some soup. So I get to the chiller that had the soup in it and there's this couple stood blocking the chiller. I'm like, that's fine, I can wait, it's no problem, I'm a Christian. But they were so loved up that they had no idea that anybody was waiting. And they're there looking longingly into each other's eyes and then back at the soup. And they're planning this nice romantic soup lunch. And they're like, oh, darling, what soup should we have? I don't know, darling, you choose the soup. Oh, what, darling, I think we should have pea and ham because it's the perfect combination, just like us. And I'm just going, oh, my goodness me, it's soup, just choose your soup. And I'm really getting impatient, and I maybe it spills over a little bit, and I maybe cough slightly too loudly. And they're, oh, we're so sorry. We're just trying to choose our soup. And I'm like, yes, I can see you're trying to choose. So I'm going to go for the least romantic soup, chunky vegetable. And I walk off. I'm like, they're like, oh, thank you for letting us choose. Just wait. I'm like, yeah, no, have a super day. You know, I'm just the frustration spills over because I'm not a fan of waiting. Waiting rooms, long lines, red lights. They test our patience, don't they? Like nothing else. And when our patience is tested, what is it that spills out? We can hate waiting, but one thing I see through the scriptures is that God seems to love waiting seasons. He seems to love using those seasons that frustrate us so much. Abraham waited 25 years for a son. Moses waited 40 years in the wilderness. David waited and waited and waited to become king. And something's happening in that season of waiting. And last time we were with Joseph, we find that he's falsely accused, he's in prison, and he's waiting. He's waiting. And he's wondering if those dreams that he had, that longing that he has come to an end. Maybe that door, maybe that chapter's closed. Maybe I got it all wrong. Waiting is where trust is tested. But it's also where faith is formed. When we have to wait on God, the substance of our faith is tested. And what comes to the surface is really significant. But waiting is really hard. Because it hits our hearts, not just our watches. And so we're going to explore a little bit that this morning in a message that I'm calling Waiting Well. And we're going to look at Joseph's life in this season and some postures that we see in Joseph's life, that whether we're waiting in a waiting season or not, something that we can learn from Joseph's life. So hopefully you found Genesis 40. Let me read it to you. Just the first 8 verses says this. Sometime after this. So sometime after Joseph is in prison, he's been faithful in prison, so the prison guards have put him in some areas of responsibility. And it says, after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody. And one night, they both dreamed. The cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers, who were with him in custody in the master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" They said to him, "We have had dreams and there is no one to interpret them." And Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." See, waiting, I think, can be one of the hardest seasons in our life. Maybe we're waiting for that job opportunity to open up, waiting for some test results to come back. Maybe it's waiting for that relationship to heal, waiting for that friend or family member maybe to come to faith or come back to faith. Waiting when it feels like God is distant and silent. Some of the hardest times of our life, waiting when our trust, in that season of waiting, when our trust starts to be really tested. That's exactly where we find Joseph in Genesis 40. He has been faithful in Potiphar's house. He's been falsely accused. And now he's sitting in a prison cell waiting. And he doesn't know how long he's going to be there for. We have the joy of the scriptures that we can read it and find out in a few lines what's going to happen to him. Joseph doesn't have that privilege. He is living that moment. Will he ever get out? But in the waiting, we see that God is working. And what we see in Joseph is that waiting time with God is not wasted time. And God starts to work in and through these seasons in Joseph's life, shaping his character, opening these unseen doors, and preparing Joseph. And I want to suggest something similar happens to us in those seasons as well. Maybe you find yourself in a waiting season right now. Maybe it's unclear what's going on. Maybe you can recognize some of what maybe Joseph is feeling in this moment. The ache, the longing, the desire to step into something, the uncertainty, the questions, wondering if maybe has God forgotten me? I know he's meant to be faithful and with it, but has he forgotten me? Maybe you're just waiting for a breakthrough, for an answer, for clarity, for something in your life to finally make some sense. That season of waiting. Maybe you're not in a season of waiting right now. Maybe you like life is pretty steady. God's opened the doors. I'm getting the breakthrough. It's one of those amazing seasons. But whether we're in a season of waiting or not, I think there's something that we see in the life of Joseph. Whether we're waiting and it's that frustration, or whether we're walking and it's that excitement, I think there's something in the life of Joseph and a posture in Joseph that we can learn from this morning. So we're going to explore 3 things, because this is a sermon and there has to be 3 things. 3 things that we're going to explore that we see in the life of Joseph that I think can really help us as we seek to be disciples of Jesus in those waiting seasons, but also recognizing that in the other seasons that God is forming something in us. And the first thing is this, that Joseph seeks a healthy heart. Joseph seeks a healthy heart. Genesis chapter 40, we see that Joseph is still in prison. We don't know how long he's been in prison, but I want to suggest it's probably been some time that he's been able to build up that reputation with the prison guards. They've seen him at work and they know that he's somebody who can be trusted. It says in the text that Joseph was confined. He is limited. He is shut in. He's cut off from the future that he once imagined, those dreams that he had, and he's stuck having to wait. There's those seasons, aren't there, where we feel confined, where we feel restricted by circumstances we didn't choose, by a diagnosis we never dreamed of, by financial constraint maybe, confined by the weight of disappointment, feeling like life has stalled, when we can't move as freely forward as we wanted to. Had the privilege this week of being on a Zoom call with Pete Malkin, who's part of our church and is ministering into Ukraine, and just being with some of the team there. And we were exploring some of this stuff with them. And I was like, what's it feel like in those moments to feel confined when actually, literally, and we heard from Victor. Sorry, Victor. My brain was saying Pete, and my mouth was not forming the words. Victor, a few weeks ago, during August, when he preached about that, literally overnight, things shifted for them. Can you imagine that experience? Suddenly life, everything that you hoped it would be, suddenly everything shifts. And there's that confinement and that restriction, confined by that weight. And the plan we thought that God was writing doesn't seem to be unfolding. But I think Joseph does something really powerful in this moment that we can see in the text. Because he doesn't try and escape the pain. He doesn't try and deny the situation. But I think what we see here is that he starts to invite God into it. I think that's something really significant. Instead of shutting down to God and to other people, we see his life open up. And I think there's something there of what it looks like to have a healthy heart. Instead of bitterness hardening his heart, he's letting God heal it and work through it. Joseph has a healthy heart, and I think we see it through the evidence of what he does. And there's two things that we see him do in this prison moment of his life that I think display a healthy heart. Because what we see is that one day in Joseph's life, these two prisoners come into the prison. It's Pharaoh's cupbearer and Pharaoh's baker. Now, these weren't just minor servants in the royal household, okay? These were significant positions to hold. So the cupbearer, he was the one that was responsible for everything that the Pharaoh drank. And he wouldn't have just served the Pharaoh the wine. He would have tasted it beforehand to make sure that it wasn't poisoned. He was someone that would have been alongside the Pharaoh in close proximity. Maybe even, it says that they were trusted. And so maybe in that moment, there's moments where the Pharaoh would confide in those that are around him, the cupbearer being one of them. So this was an influential position in the royal household. The chief baker, responsible for the presentation, the preparation, and the food that the Pharaoh was going to be eating. Again, making sure that nothing had happened to that food in order to kill the Pharaoh. But also, is this food fit for the royal household? And we see these two people that were close proximity to the king of Egypt, influential roles, are now in prison alongside Joseph. Coincidence? I'm not so sure. Why are they in prison? We don't know is the answer to that. We know that something significant has happened because it says in verse 2 that Pharaoh was angry with his two officers. Maybe there'd been a plot against Pharaoh. I think that's possible. We'll see in a few moments that actually the outcome for each of these people is different. So maybe one of them was slightly more involved than the other. We don't know whether that was the situation. Maybe there'd been some suspected disloyalty, so they're in prison. Maybe the Pharaoh's just flexing his power and going, I'm the leader, I just chuck these two in prison. We don't know the reason why, but whatever the reason, both of these men have been thrown into prison, and yet they've got an influential relationship with Pharaoh. I think this is more than coincidence. I think God is doing some divine positioning. Because when Joseph is confined, God isn't. And we'll see in our life that sometimes we can feel restricted by things. It doesn't mean God is restricted by what he's working and what he's doing. And we can look at our circumstances and think, there's just no way of getting through this. And God is doing things and weaving things to create his story for us to live into. God is bringing these connections into Joseph's life. The very people that he will meet in prison are the ones that have access to Pharaoh. And we'll see later on in the story that actually Joseph speaks to one of them and says, can you remember me to Pharaoh? Because he knows that they're going to have that position back. What looks like a random coincidence is divine positioning. And what Joseph does in this moment in prison, I think, is quite profound. because the cupbearer and the baker each have a dream, and they wake up disturbed. And Joseph comes to them in the morning, and he asks them, why are your faces downcast? Why are you sad? What are you struggling with? I think that simple question from Joseph spells out so much about what it looks like to have a healthy heart in those seasons of waiting. Here is a man, Joseph, who has been wronged, he's been betrayed, he's been abandoned, but instead of being wrapped up in his own pain, he's aware of the pain of others. His eyes are open to the struggle and the suffering of other people. How does someone do that? When you've got every reason to focus on your own struggle and your own pain, you have enough of a healthy heart to see that person is in agony, that person's in pain, and to reach out to them. Somewhere in that dark prison, Joseph has learned that if you don't tend to your own heart, if you don't let God deal with the pain, and if you don't process that pain with God and with others and professionals if you need to, then actually what's going to end up happening is you will project that pain onto other people. And it blinds you. Blinds you to the way that God is seeking to work in and through you to reach others for his glory. And it can happen in those moments of confinement when we think there's just no way God can work. We just notice somebody else's pain. He notices the sadness. These two men, they have fallen hard and they have fallen fast. And Joseph sees their pain. See, at this moment, Joseph doesn't see what separates them. These men have got the influential position that Joseph has dreamed of having. But he hasn't got such a broken heart that he's just going like, oh, it serves you right. You've got a position of authority and responsibility. You should have stewarded that better. He doesn't see the status. He doesn't see what separates them. He doesn't see the prejudice. He doesn't see race or faith as a thing to separate. Instead, he just reaches out and he sees two human beings that are hurting. We need a church that has a healthy heart. We need a church in this nation, the nations, that doesn't seek to set other people up as the enemy, that doesn't see everything that separates. The world does a really good job of that, of polarizing people and separating people. The church is the one that gets to step in and see the humanity of people that are hurting and reach the need and has a healthy enough heart to say, you're broken, you're hurting, I am too. But I know a God who can heal, that can set free, and I'm going to step in, not with any other agenda other than just to serve. It's the clue of a healthy heart. And we see it in the life of Joseph. And so these two men open up. So we see there that one of the evidences of the healthy heart that Joseph has got in this place of confinement is he sees the brokenness and the pain of other people and seeks to serve. Something else happens. We see it in verse 8. Then they said to him, we have had dreams and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Clue of a healthy heart. See, this cupbearer and this baker have had dreams. And the cupbearer's dream is of this vine with three branches and blossom that produces grapes. And the grapes are pressed, and it's pressed into Pharaoh's cup, and he drinks from it. And Joseph listens, and the gifting that he has in that moment is to interpret the dream. And he says, in 3 days later, you cupbearer will be restored, and you'll serve Pharaoh again. And I can just imagine the baker going, now that sounds like a really good dream. So I'm going to share. He gets the courage to share his dream. He says, so I've had this dream and I've got like baskets of bread on my head and these birds come and eat it. And Joseph says, I'd love to be able to tell you it's the same outcome, but actually you're going to be lifted up. And when you're lifted up, it's going to be the end of your life. I think what we see in this moment is that the integrity and the spiritual maturity of Joseph is that he doesn't twist this message to protect anybody or please anybody. He just speaks as God is sharing. And even in prison, Joseph is serving. He's being a faithful messenger. And how is he being a faithful messenger? How's that healthy heart? He's seen the need. He's seen they're sad. And also, he points them to God. He says, do not interpretations belong to God? He has left his life open to God. He's not closed off to God. I think two of the evidences of a healthy heart within the church is that we see the need and the pain of people and we seek to step in. And we're also going, there's a God that you need to know and I can help you get there. I can introduce you to him through what I'm doing, through the gifts that he's given me. It's evidence of a healthy heart. Do not interpretations belong to God? One of the things that we see in the posture of Joseph in this waiting season is that he is seeking a healthy heart. The second thing is this: he keeps open hands. In the seasons of confinement and waiting, even in the seasons where we're running with God and it's absolutely phenomenal, incredible, keeping open hands, Joseph serves those around him faithfully. He's not moping about being in prison. He's not sulking. Instead of sulking, he's seeking to serve. And he's serving those that are right in front of him. Not with the dream that he had of being able to serve those that bow down to him, but actually serving the ones that he's bowing down with. And we see that he's given this area of responsibility. This time it's to look after his fellow inmates. What's remarkable is that Joseph doesn't treat this as a moment to be beneath him. This is the moment that I get to serve God. He isn't frustrated. He's just serving faithfully where he is, even where it's not where he wants to be. Joseph is serving right in front of him. He's not leading a nation. He's not interpreting dreams for the king. But he's just showing up each day, doing what's faithfully in front of him. He may not be learning to build the character through leading a nation, but he is by just serving those people around him. And what we see in this moment is that as he serves the fellow prisoners, serving isn't about status, it's about stewardship. It's about stewarding that which you've been given for the sake of others and the glory of God. That's what stewardship is. Faithfully giving of what God has given you. Your time, your giftings, your opportunity, your finances, your circumstances. It's about being faithful in the spaces you find yourself, giving the resources that God has given you. You might think that your time belongs to you. When we give our life to Jesus, it's his. He's gifting it to us. Every breath that we breathe is a gift of God. The job we have is a gift from God. We get to steward. The finances we get is a gift from God that we get to steward. Our health is a gift from God that we get to steward. And in that moment, we get to steward that which we have to meet the needs of the people around us for the glory of God. Some of you have been through some stuff in this room, circumstances that have felt like they've broken you. And as a pastor, I get the privilege of journeying alongside people and some of the stuff you're journeying through right now. And for some of you, that's given you such a deep empathy. The gift of that season for you is a deeper empathy for other people. And it's amazing to see that you're stepping in and you're seeking to be trained up as a Kintsugi Hope group leader. Able to provide a safe space for people in our community to explore the stuff of health and mental health and emotional health. And as the church, be in that space. Steward the experiences we've had and the time we have to meet the needs of the people around us. As we do that and create that supportive environment, you're shepherds. You're shepherding people. For some of you, you love that getting alongside people and sharing your skills and wisdom and helping people to discover something within them that they didn't know they had and to bring that out. And you are teachers. Maybe you're not in a classroom teaching, but you are a teacher. Some of you, you're apostolic. You see the needs of those that you live alongside and you're stood there and you're going, I have this idea and I wonder if this idea would meet that need. And you start to step in with something new. We've heard from Andy and Lorraine. That is pioneering. That is apostolic, to step in and meet that need. Maybe you're the type of friend who listens and encourages someone going through tough times. And instead of pretending that it's all fine, you start to share the stories of the hope that you have because of the Jesus that you know. And there's something of that, being able to share that story of your life and lead others into that place, is something of an evangelist in you. Maybe for some of you, you speak up when a friend or colleague is being mistreated. You see that something's wrong. And you're like, I just can't stand by and just let that happen. I've got to step in and I've got to say something. And you bring God's heart for justice into that situation. And there's something of the prophetic in that. For Joseph, it was the interpretation of dreams. For us, it'll be different giftings and different things that we get to bring into that moment and steward to meet the needs of the people around us and to bring glory to God. open hands with our time, with our money, with our talents, giving what God has given us, stewarding through serving. It's another way that we see that Joseph is waiting well. Joseph could have thought, I'm in prison. My life is like, it's hopeless. It's an end. Who am I to help anybody? He is confined. He's been betrayed. He gets forgotten. So easy in those moments to let the focus drift inwards on his own hurt, his own injustice, those lost dreams. But stewardship is not about whether we feel important, recognized, or capable. Stewardship is about faithfully serving God where we find ourselves. What has God placed in my hands right now? And how can I use that to serve the needs of the people around me and bring glory to God? So Joseph, seeking a healthy heart, he's keeping open hands. And the third thing is this. We see that he's developing steady feet. Steady feet that are founded on the faith that's being forged in this moment. It says in verse 20, on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all of his servants and lifted up the head of the cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. See, as this chapter draws to a close, what we see is that Joseph's story goes to a very painful place. Pharaoh restores the cupbearer, and just as Joseph says that the baker is going to lose his life, Pharaoh executes the baker. But in verse 23, I think possibly one of the most painful lines in Joseph's story is that the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. We see previously in verse 14 that Joseph has interpreted this dream to the cupbearer that he's going to be restored. And he says to him, only remember me when it's well with you. And please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh. And so get me out of this house. So he's taken that opportunity. He said, you're going to be restored. I know how God works. And I know this is God speaking. He's going to restore you. Please remember me. Please remember me. But when the moment comes, the cupbearer forgets. And if we read on into chapter 41, we actually see that it's 2 years that he's forgotten. 2 years that the cupbearer gets out of prison, is serving the Pharaoh. 2 years pass before Pharaoh has a dream and the cupbearer says, I remember somebody. So that's on top of whatever length of time that Joseph has spent already in prison. Can you imagine the emotional toll that must have been for Joseph? Scholars believe that when Joseph got out of prison, he was 30 years old. I think some evidence to suggest that. That means from the moment he was sold into slavery by his brothers to the moment he's released from prison, 13 years has passed. 13 years of being a slave, of being imprisoned, confined, forgotten. 13 years. Yet through all of this, Joseph has developed steady feet. Steady feet are built in seasons of waiting. They're strengthened when we serve faithfully in the hidden places, when we trust God and his timing. Genesis 40 ends with Joseph being forgotten by the cupbearer, but he has not been forgotten by God. God is working. And for 2 more years, as God weaves his story, Joseph is learning to develop steady feet. And God is starting to bring things together. He's bringing together Pharaoh's dream, Egypt's need, because there's going to be some need in the area that we'll see in a few weeks' time, where they need somebody to come and help. And God's letting all these things come together. Joseph's gifting in his character to that moment when God says, now. But there's a waiting. And I think Isaiah 40, verse 31, gives some language to Joseph's experience. Says, those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. See the promise? The promise is not ease. Any runners in church this morning? Running is not easy. You go for a walk, a long, healthy, like hike. It is not easy. So this isn't the promise of an easy life. It's the promise of endurance through what we go through. And that's the promise of those that wait on God. The promise of those that wait on God is not ease, but endurance. Waiting on God does not drain us. It anchors us. And Joseph's strength didn't come from what he could see, but from the one who was working in ways that he couldn't see. And in seasons of waiting, when we wait on God, we don't stand still. We keep working, we keep walking, and he gives us a strength, steady feet that are forged in waiting, anchored in the faithfulness of God. And Joseph will need to wait, but he won't collapse into despair. He holds on to the God who never forgets. And when God says, go, Joseph's ready. That's the little tidbit for next time. For now, we see that Joseph's having to wait well, and he's seeking a healthy heart. He processes that pain with God instead of projecting it onto others. He's keeping open hands. He's stewarding through serving, giving others what he's been given, no matter where he is, and through it all, he's developing steady feet, the kind that keep walking faithfully, even when the path feels endless, when that season of waiting seems to go on and on and on. And what we see actually that happens in this season is recorded in Psalm 105. Psalm 105 verse 19 says, until the time came to fulfill his word, the Lord tested Joseph's character. It's not punishment, it's preparation. And while Joseph waited, God is aligning all these things for that Kairos moment when Joseph can step in. Waiting is one of God's greatest classrooms, where we learn so much about what he's doing and who he is and who we are, and stuff comes to the surface and God brings healing and wholeness if we let him. And the very place that feels like confinement is the place where God is doing his deepest work. Sekar, band, could you guys start to come up? We're going to respond just with a song this morning before we close. Joseph's story reminds us that waiting time is never wasted time with God, that he's working. Whether you find yourself in that season or not, there's something that we can learn of the posture of Joseph as he grows into all that God is calling him to be. And God is still at work. And church, my prayer is that he would help us to develop healthy hearts, open hands, and steady feet. And just before we draw to a close, just before we sing, something we're doing in each of these talks is we're just giving some really practical ways that people can step into some stuff. So as a church, we have the rhythm of life through up, in, out, and down, four relationships, and our up relationship with God through our values of prayer and worship. Maybe this week you want to physically or in your mind just lift your hands. Simple act of surrender. We'll send this out through our WhatsApp and our WhatsApp channel and our e-newsletter. Maybe you just want to pray and give your life as a moment of worship, giving him the waiting, giving him the season you're in, giving him yourself this week as a living sacrifice, placing your life into his hands. Maybe it's through our in relationship within the church, through our values of family and learning. Maybe you want to journal or discuss with your family or your small group, what might God be forming in me as I wait? Maybe you can look back in a season where you've been waiting and go, what was God forming in me then? And it's not just, our learning value isn't just intellectual knowledge, it's about applied living. So what was God doing in that season? What is God doing in that season? Out, our relationship with those that don't yet know Jesus through mission and hospitality. Maybe ask yourself or in a small group, who's right in front of me that I can bless individually, collectively? Down, our relationship with ourselves through rest and celebration. Maybe you can celebrate the small signs of God's faithfulness. Maybe you just thank him. Maybe as you gather with others, maybe around your table as a family in the evening, just take a moment just to like, what can we celebrate that God's doing? Maybe before bed, God, what have you done today, big and small? Just celebrate that.